عنه وبشرع تتسقط عنه ويلا ارحل يا بشار
يلا ارحل يا بشار
ويلا ارحل يا بشار
يلا ارحل يا بشار
ويا بشار ويا كذاب وتضرب انت وهالخطاب الحريه صابت على الباب ويلا ارحل يا بشار
يلا ارحل يا بشار
ويلا ارحل يا بشار
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Daoud Qutob, who is a former Ferris Professor of Journalism at Princeton University, where he taught a seminar on new media in the Arab world. Qutob is a Palestinian journalist and media activist who was born in Jerusalem and studied in the United States and lives in Jordan. In 2000, he established the Arab world's first internet radio station, AmanNet, at www.amannet.net. An award-winning journalist and TV producer, Mr. Qutob is active in media freedom efforts in the Middle East. Welcome to Background Briefing, Daoud Qutob.
Thank you very much.
And President Obama visited Jordan. Of course, he went to the historic Petra ruins after meeting with King Abdullah. So what's the takeaway today, the day after, in Jordan?
Well, Jordan, you know, is a strong ally of the U.S. I think after Israel, it's probably the strongest ally to the U.S. in the region. And Jordan feels very gratified by the visit of Obama. The U.S. has approved further cash grant to the Jordanian Treasury. Jordan is having a kind of a financial crisis of their own, and they feel quite happy with the visit. Of course, the real issue is the Palestinian-Israeli conflict, and it seems that Jordan is going to be playing some kind of a role in trying to bring both parties together.
So in terms of the last time we spoke, when you had an article in The Atlantic, are Palestinians ready to share a state with Jordan? Is there any follow-up on that? Because prior to President Obama's visit to Israel, King Abdullah was quoted saying that he's totally frustrated with the Palestinian president, Mahmoud Abbas, and that Abbas is more obsessed with the Israelis than he is about taking care of his own people, the Palestinians. It was kind of a pretty damning comment. So what's going on in that regard?
I'm not sure about this comment, but the relations between
the comment happened, though, didn't it? I mean, it's an accurate quote, isn't it?
I don't remember seeing it. Whatever the quote was, I mean, King Abdullah had his own problems with quotes lately with an article by Jeffrey Goldberg. But be that as it may, as far as we know, the relationship has been improved. It has been quite good between King Abdullah and President Abbas. And I think by all means, the king visited Ramallah. Abbas is here in Amman. He comes here very often. So there is no real sign that there is any tension on that level. The question, of course, is that everybody is trying to figure out a way to kickstart the negotiations, and the Israelis have been very stubborn in refusing to freeze the settlement activities, which in many people's eyes shows that they're not serious about peace.
Well, that is a subject in itself. We could spend the next hour talking about that, Daoud Qutob. But let's talk about the King Abdullah's press conference, where he pointed out to the president and to the broader or the wider American audience that the refugee crisis that Jordan faces because of the Syrian war, the civil war in Syria, would be the equivalent of the United States having 30 million refugees suddenly dumped on them. And that number could double to 60 million soon. And that's the situation that Jordan faces, right?
It is. It's quite a big humanitarian problem. People are coming in daily, sometimes hundreds, sometimes even 1,000 people coming in. And the big problem, of course, is housing and water. Jordan is a very water-poor country, and the presence of so many refugees is really depriving this country of the badly needed water and other resources, you know, schooling, hospitals, food, shelter, you know, all these areas are a major concern to the Jordanians. And, you know, there is international support, but it's way short of what is needed.
So the $200 million that President Obama pledged to help the Syrian refugees in Jordan. Is that sufficient or not?
I'm not sure. I don't know that the 200 is about for the refugees, but certainly it's a huge boost to Jordan's cash-strapped economy and would help in laying some of the costs of the Syrian problem. There's no doubt about it, but it's really a continuous problem because it's depriving water, but it's also extracting labor. People are being replaced now with much cheaper Syrian labor, and that's causing also some kind of social problems in the north of Jordan. So there's different levels of problems that the Syrian issue is causing to the country.
And Jordan is a small country, as you mentioned. It's water poor, and it already had to absorb a lot of refugees from Iraq from the previous Iraq war.
Yes, and even going back further, the Palestinian conflict. This country has been living on absorbing refugees. And to be fair, it's not all bad. I mean, Jordan has actually benefited from so many refugees, not just because of humanitarian support, but people usually bring with them money and projects and their entrepreneurship. So it shouldn't always be seen as a negative. But in the short term, it does cause some problems for a country like Jordan.
So, Dawood Qutob again in Amman, Jordan. He's a former Ferris Professor of Journalism at Princeton University, where he taught a seminar on new media in the Arab world. And he's a Palestinian journalist, media activist. He was born in Jerusalem, studied in the United States, and lives in Jordan. In 2000, he established the Arab world's first internet radio station, Amman Net, and he is active in media freedom efforts in the Middle East. Let's turn to the broader issue of the Syrian conflict. And I think there's no question, at least in my mind, Dawood, that last-minute phone call that President Obama arranged between the Turkish Prime Minister and the Israeli Prime Minister on the tarmac has a lot to do with the Syrian situation. In fact, Prime Minister Netanyahu said it did. What do you think is going on there? It seems to me that this may be an indication that there's going to be some kind of joint military action between the Turks and the Israelis.
Well, the big problem in Syria is that the different world countries are not able to create a no-fly zone. And the Syrian Air Force is acting sometimes in very nasty way, shelling rebel locations and sometimes civilian populations. And that's something that nobody's been able to stop. And I think there's more and more talk about the idea of finding a way to stop the use of the heavy weapons by the Syrian government. Apparently, the Syrian anti-air defenses are very sophisticated. And I think so. If NATO is ever going to be involved, Turkey has to be involved, and possibly Israel, although this is a very politically sensitive subject. So a lot of it would have to be taken care of by a country like Turkey. So I think on that level, it's very important. I'm not sure that the Syrian issue is the only one that is causing problems for Israel. The Turks is the only Muslim country that is part of NATO and has a peace agreement. I mean, they have embassies between Turkey and Israel. So the breakup of relations was detrimental to the Israeli attempt to kind of open up to the rest of the world, especially Europe, and Turkey is a key country in that level. So there's been a number of reasons. The one man who is against all this is Avigdor Lieberman, the former foreign minister, who's now facing his own trial for corruption, and he's therefore not in any position to be able to stop an attempt to have an apology. So I think, in a way, different pieces of the puzzle happen to have happened at the same time. President Obama's effort is certainly a key factor that I think encouraged Netanyahu to take that step of apologizing.
Well, if the I mean, there's no way that the Israeli troops could occupy or even put their foot on Syrian soil. I don't think that would, although the assumption is that somebody's going to go in there probably soon to secure the chemical arsenals. And obviously it would make more sense for Turkish Islamic soldiers to be involved. But the whole region, as you well know, Daoud Kitab, is a tinderbox. And my understanding is that Secretary of State John Kerry, of course, went to Iraq and met with the Iraqi Prime Minister Maliki and tried to convince him to stop the Iranian overflights. Iran is supplying the Assad regime around the clock now. They're doubling down. The West seems to be vacillating about who to support. And, you know, as you know, there was one of the leaders of the Syrian opposition just quit in frustration because the West is not supplying arms like Iran is supplying arms to Assad. My understanding is that if and when the Assads fall, that is likely to have a ripple effect into Iraq. And Iraq is the most unstable domino, if you will, because already the Sunni are very restive and so are the Kurds. So you're right next door there. What do you think is going on here? I mean, is that possible that you're going to have a kind of domino effect and that the Iraq war, in effect, is going to be reignited when Assad falls?
I don't think there will be a reigniting of the Iraq war. The situation in Iraq is quite tense. The Sunni groups are much more emboldened now, and they're protesting around the clock against Maliki. So Maliki is in a difficult position already. The key, of course, is what King Hussein Abdullah once said, the Shiite crescent, and the fear that Hezbollah plus the Alawites in Syria and Iraq and Iran would create that crescent. I think that is the key, and I think the fall of Syria would have a negative effect on Iran, but I'm not sure that we would have the kind of internal war that you're talking about. I think it will just have a bad effect on Iran and Hezbollah probably in Lebanon, but I'm not sure how much it would affect Iraq. It might weaken Iraq to a certain degree because Iraqis are now supporting Assad for not sure why, but they're supporting the Assad regime. Maybe they're making money out of it. I don't know.
Well, the other domino, if you will, at least a flashpoint in this complicated situation vis-a-vis the Syrian civil war and how it's impacting the neighborhood. Syrian rebels have seized a 15-mile buffer zone between the Jordanian border to the Golan Heights. So now you have the Syrian rebels face-to-face with the Israelis. And these are fighters from the al-Nusra Front, which are often referred to in the Western press as being al-Qaeda affiliated. Do you think that there's, obviously that's a flashpoint, but what's your understanding about what's happening there in that border zone between the Jordanian border and the Golan Heights?
I on paper what you said raise the fears, but I think the rebel groups in Syria have their hands full with the Syrian army. I don't think that they are in the same league with the Israelis. I mean, they're having a hard enough time with the Syrians. There was some shooting across the border yesterday, I think, and the Israelis kind of wiped out, you know, the source of the shooting. I don't think that these groups, they are much less disciplined and trained, would stand, you know, a moment in front of the Israeli arsenal. I don't think they would be really suicidal, if you will, to try to break into the Golan Heights. And I think their colleagues in the secular anti-Assad movement will not allow them because this would ruin the efforts to bring down the Assad regime. You know, I don't think that's in the cards now. They're all, you know, committed to bring down Bashar al-Assad, and I don't think they will attempt to test the Israelis and because the Israelis will be, merciless.
So, Daoud Kitab, the Syrian rebels have just seized an air base in Daraa, which is right across the border from you in Jordan. It's also where the Syrian rebellion began. Is that significant?
Again, it's significant in what I was telling you earlier, that the biggest enemy to the rebels is the planes that are bringing down, hell from the air. I don't know if these people can use these anti-air missiles that they've taken care of, but I think the Syrian Air Force would not attempt to get close to them. And I think in that sense, it's a strong point for the rebels that they can at least protect their new discoveries, their new, liberated areas, if you will.
Well, the Syrian rebel leader who just quit in disgust at the West said that, that all the West is concerned about is the length of the fighters' beards and not the fact that they're so outgunned by Assad's military. What's your sense, then, of the day after in Syria, which seems to be the concern on the part of the West? There's been even discussions along the lines that Syria could end up as a Somalia on the Mediterranean.
I've been checking a lot on this. I think it's exaggerated, the numbers and the power of the Salafite or the jihadist elements that are in among the rebels. The majority of the Syrian Free Army are secular, are not religious. I don't think that this is a game changer in any way. I don't really think that this idea of a Somali, Somalization of Syria is really not born on the ground. But the Americans are quite tested because of what happened in Afghanistan. They supported the Mujahideen, and the Mujahideen turned against them. So I think, from that perspective, I can understand their hesitation. But on the other hand, they're allowing the Assad regime to slaughter these people, and I think, in a way, it seems kind of hypocritical to basically be about freedom and independence and human rights and then stand by when these people are being killed. And I think there's certainly enough disciplined rebels, if you will, that they can support without having to worry about the weapons getting into the hands of the, extremists, if you will.
Well, just in closing, Daoud Khatib, I take it that you feel that Iran is going to be the loser in this situation and, by extension, Hezbollah. What's your picture, then, of the day after?
Well, yeah, I mean, yes, this day after is kind of dragged on for now a while, so it's not as easy as I think one might think. It's a prolonged conflict, and as long as the Russians and the Iranians are backing Assad regime, and as long as the rebels are not trained and aren't equipped, it might drag for some time. But what happens after the day after, I think it will take some time before things settle. And I think, by and large, the key to everything is that people should have the freedom to decide their futures. As long as that principle is upheld, I think it will be okay.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us from Amman today.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Daoud Khatib, again, former Ferris Professor of Journalism at Princeton University, where he taught a seminar on new media in the Arab world. Khatib is a Palestinian journalist and media activist who was born in Jerusalem and studied in the United States and lives in Jordan. In 2000, he established the Arab world's first internet radio station, Amman Net, and he is an award-winning journalist and TV producer active in media freedom efforts in the Middle East. And we're going to take a brief station break and be back talking with renowned media theorist Douglas Rushkoff.